Hello and welcome to the Project Elected podcast. Project Elect is a nonpartisan nonprofit whose goal is pretty simple. We want to get more Latter-day Saint women involved in public service. On this podcast, we interview amazing Latter-day Saint women who are involved in public service. My name is Audrey Perry Martin. I'm the founder of Project Elect and the host of this podcast.
I am so excited today to be interviewing Kristen Andrus. She is a little different than our usual guests because she is not an elected official, but she has been involved in so many things, made a big difference in public policy arena. And I think she is such a good example for women of how you can get involved and the different things you can do other than actually running for office. So Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
First, can you just start off and tell us a little bit about your story and introduce yourself a little bit, kind of how you came to get involved in the public arena?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm originally from the San Francisco Bay Area. I moved out here. My husband was starting a startup or joining a startup called Skull Candy. And I laugh that I'm so involved in trying to make Utah a better place because I kind of came kicking and screaming from California to Utah and have called it home for the last 16 years. And I just have grown to love it and embrace it. And, you know, we had some successful outcomes as a family with my husband's businesses and going public and a couple of different things. And, you know, instead of kind of like this feeling of elation and, oh my gosh, you know, should we buy a house or a car? I actually felt this really, really heavy weight of responsibility and of, you know, where much is given, much is required. And it was very clear to me that our family had a lot required of us. And so I remember one day, like one of the deals closed and instead of, you know, like, let's go to a fancy dinner, I was like, Jeremy, let's go get groceries and let's go down to the VOA Youth Resource Center and serve dinner. And so we got our kids out of school and we did that. And that's just kind of the path that we've chosen ever since. And so I would say in the beginning, I was, you know, really found a lot of joy and fulfillment and kind of boots on the ground. And I'd say I still do. Boots on the ground, helping out, like, do you need food? Here's food. You need a school backpack? Here's a school backpack. And really, you know, mentoring families, refugee families, and understanding what food stamps, you know, what does that mean? Understanding Section 8 housing, understanding intergenerational poverty, and like really sitting on the floor with friends that I got to know and help and love. And which kind of got me into this realm of learning about period poverty. And what's neat about understanding what was going on with, you know, not having access to period products was, you know, you could really trace it all back to on a Wednesday afternoon, I signed up to volunteer with my kids at Kids Eat. It's just a program that does weekend, you know, food bags. And it's a place I could bring my kids. And it was really important that at least once a month, we were out serving the community. And so if you look at like the 10 different things that fell into place after that, I ended up at a middle school, still kind of connected with that Kids Eat, but I kept kind of leaning in on different projects. And one of the social workers said, this is great. Thanksgiving dinners are needed, but what I really need are pads and tampons for my girls. And I'm like, wait, what? You know, I had no idea that girls didn't have access to period products. And so I called my friend and neighbor, Emily McCormick, and I knew she had been working on overturning the tampon tax for many years. And she's like, yes, this is a problem. And so I partnered with the Utah Food Bank. That first year, we ended up raising money and donating 3 million period products across the state. And it's something they hadn't done ever before. And so Emily came to me and said, this is great. And we need this in the food bank pantries. But come up to Capitol Hill with me and let's try to get free period products into all Utah schools. And that's sustainable. And that's something that can really change our state. And so kind of begrudgingly, I was like, okay, I'll come with you because I, you know the Speaker of the House, but I'm not into policy, not my thing. And so I went up with her and he said, yes. And the ball, you know, just this incredible momentum happened. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I could spend the next year on this, like imagine what I could do, you know, statewide, truly being able to scale this. So that was my first entree into politics or, you know, issues that have a statewide reach.
That's incredible. I love how you said earlier, you know, where much is given, much is expected, and that you really took that to heart, and you're getting your kids out there and your family out there and serving all the time. And that's how you kind of learn about problems, because if you're not in the community, you don't really know, you know, what people need. We can get in a bubble. So kudos to you for really being out there and figuring out this was a big problem and jumping right in. I love that story. So tell me kind of what you did at Policy Project with the period project. I know you guys were really successful, so I'd love to hear kind of the timeline and the story of how it went up at the legislature and what you were able to do.
Yeah, it was really an incredible story. And how I'll start is it was a group of, you know, three or four stay-at-home moms, you know, sitting around a well-loved kitchen table in Salt Lake City and a BYU law student. And so Mary Catherine Perry is our head of government relations, and she has worked for the legislature before with Ledge Research before she had kids. And Emily McCormick had been working on, you know, overturning the tampon tax. So, and I had no idea. I knew nothing about policy, but I knew about philanthropy. I knew about the need. I had a big network on Instagram. So we all kind of brought really unique things to the table, although we had never done this before. And so we found a problem, and it was we call it kind of like a silent need. And so one thing that really helped us in our success, I would say, is that it didn't have any baggage. You know, if you deal with homelessness, intergenerational poverty, LGBTQ issues, like whatever it is, there's a lot of baggage and history with, you know, political, with legislation and things like that. We came across something that had no history. And so that helped us. We also came across a silent need that was just not talked about. It was kind of still kind of had that shame and stigma, even in, you know, 2022 in the United States, which is crazy. But it also was personal to every single woman or girl. They knew exactly what we were talking about. And we brought this issue to the surface where not many of us knew that five houses down and five seats away, kids and women did not have access to period products. That just like didn't even cross. So we were highlighting a problem that once you know about it, you're like, well, of course it's expensive. And there wasn't a lot of baggage. So the speaker was really, really helpful in supporting us. He made it a priority for him. We had a good relationship with him personally, and Emily had been working, you know, with him on the Hill on a couple of different things. So those personal relationships that we had, and then that Mary Catherine Perry brought to the table, her husband works at the Hinckley Institute of Politics. So he had a lot of relationships. And so really working on those, helping people understand, you know, what we were doing. One thing that was really important to us is that we kept it positive. So we were helping families engage in the political process in a very positive way. I remember when we talked about doing a rally, and everyone's like, oh, you know, no, you don't want to do a rally up at the Capitol, a bunch of angry women. And we're like, oh, no, this is going to be pink, and it's going to be a party, and we're going to have a DJ, and it's going to be, you know, really positive. And so we also turn that in schools where we're trying to find a positive way for these families to engage with their schools in a positive way with the Utah Period Project. So that was exactly a year ago. It was the session last year, and we went up, we toured the state. We did period parties. We literally turned periods into parties, and we went from Logan to St. George. We went to tons of schools. We delivered product. We got hundreds of student ambassadors involved. They signed themselves up to advocate in their school for period products, which is still helping us today, because they're now reporting back, you know, if their school isn't keeping up on product and all that stuff. So we just engage the community. And where the magic lies, I'd say, for the Policy Project and for what we do is not just our work, but it's bringing others along with us. And we could do this work in a silo, but bringing in women and mothers and students to engage in this process, to kind of teach them and guide them, but then let them go do it in their communities, was a really, really powerful way of, one, grassroots, you know, efforts thousands of postcards written to legislators in hot pink with a period drop on it, but in a very, very positive way. And women and girls were really, really excited to be a part of it.
I love how you have such an emphasis on being positive. I don't think I've ever seen an actual positive political rally. So what a great spin on it. And it seems like it really helped you be successful because everyone, you know, was positive about this idea and you empowered people to think about it and treat it in a way that's so rare in politics where it's all usually fighting and infighting. Did you face much opposition in this? I mean, what obstacles did you have to overcome when you were doing this?
You know, I'll tell you honestly, we didn't. Just didn't. Now this year we've moved on to the Teen Center Project and there's been more obstacles, but some of those things that I noted that it was, no one had worked on this legislation before putting free. So the legislation was HB 162, and that was putting free period products into all Utah charter and public elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools, K through 12, in all girls and unisex restrooms. And I think they actually ended up adding faculty bathrooms as well. So that was the legislation. I think we went so hard and fast and furious and started talking about periods in a way that kind of dumbfounded everyone. It almost felt like they didn't know what to do with us. We were also kind of a new group. I like to say we were rethinking normal, right? We were rethinking the way that lobbying had been done. We were rethinking the way that you meet and bring in legislators. We were bringing, you know, hundreds of students statewide. We didn't do it in the way that it had always been done. And we kept it positive. It was nonpartisan. And so we passed every committee and every house, you know, and the Senate unanimously. I mean, maybe in the Tribune on an article, there was some negative commentary, but I have to say I think it was just kind of like people did not know what to do with us. And it was kind of those things like on the way up, everybody loves you. And then you kind of start dealing with, you know, now we're dealing with, you know, teen homelessness and poverty and schools. And so now we're getting a lot more, we're getting a lot more pushback on things, but it's rare that you can find a silent need that no one's been talking about that half of the population understands that touches and affects, you know, 365,000 students across the state. And you make a reasonable, logical argument. You know, it's just like toilet paper. We do hand soap and toilet paper and, you know, and then as we talk to the men, it's like, so if you had a bloody nose during this committee hearing, would you just sit here and let the blood gush out of your nose, or would you have to go take care of it? And as Lieutenant Governor Henderson said at event with the governor the other day, she said, I miss so many votes because of my period over the 8 years that I was a senator. And that is like, you can't not unhear that. Right. And so I will say we will never, ever, ever be faced with such little pushback. And I think this year it was much more normal in feeling what it's actually like to be up on Capitol Hill and kind of fighting the good fight.
So tell me a little bit about these teen centers that you're working on now. That sounds really cool, but it sounds like it's a little harder.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. So because we have such a great relationship with the Speaker of the House, we, you know, went to him at the beginning of the session and we had some, we thought, great ideas for him. And he said, let's stick in K through 12. You guys are nailing it with these students. What is going on with our teens? How can we help our teens? We have a big budget surplus. How to go out and let's find out how we can use this one-time money, this $2 billion surplus to go back to our schools and to help our teens, whether it's mental health or all of these different things. So we went out and we talked to hundreds of counselors and principals and you name it, right? And it was very clear that yes, mental health we're in crisis mode in mental health, but the physiological needs of our kids is, you know, as one, you know, foundation director said, like in crisis level, like this is like it's never been before. And so we know that one in 50, we now know, and we're talking about and trying to highlight the problem of one in 50 of our kids are considered homeless. You know, they're considered that they don't know where they're sleeping tonight. That's one in 50. We know that one out of three of our students are deemed financially not able to pay for their own lunch. And so they're on the free and reduced lunch program. And we see that that's a 34% increase over the last 2 years. And so we went back and said, you know, we need showers, we need laundry, we need food, we need mental health for these teens. And I will say the speaker really wanted to focus on teens. And so we started out in high schools. And we had seen these incredible teen centers in Davis County and at Hillcrest High School and the first one out of East in Salt Lake District, really taking care of the basic needs. Because when we went out and spoke to all of these teachers and principals, they would look at us and say, Kristen, I cannot teach a hungry kid, you know, or these kids come and they, you know, and we're down and we really traverse the state, you know, we're in rural Utah and they're like, the kids come and they fall asleep because this is the only safe place they have in the world. We heard this horrific story of these kids who got themselves ready, five kids, and they walked to school. This is in Richfield. And they said, we think our mom, you know, we think our mom died. And they sent someone, their mom had overdosed on the couch. And where did they go? They went to school. Like, that's all they know, where they, the way they went to school. It is the safe haven. And like it or not, it's kind of that catch-all for these kids and taking care of that. And so it was very, very clear that we need to meet the kids where they're at or where we want them. And that's in school. And that we have access to this one-time funds. And we've seen these incredible teen centers, which is a place-based innovative solution because you're retrofitting existing space inside a high school. And so it will look very different in every single high school, but we will now be able to allocate a grant for probably about 70 high schools with a $250,000 to $300,000 grant to retrofit a classroom or two classrooms or a computer lab and have a trusted adult that can really connect these kids to outside resources, because we know that they don't have transportation to get go all over the place. They can have access to a shower, laundry, food, you know, mental health, kind of that wellness room idea. And then graduation and FAFSA forms and just all of these things to try to get these kids so that when they enter the classroom, they're ready to learn. We cannot put the burden on our teachers. Our teachers are doing, you know, a lot. And we can't expect that of them. And so it was incredible. This happened, I think we went, gosh, less than 6 months ago to the speaker, and we've gone across the state, and we just were appropriated $15 million from the legislature. And then with the public-private partnership, we raised $3 million. So we have $18 million to be able to put back into high schools to do these incredible teen centers to take care of our kids.
That's so incredible. And those numbers, the one in 50 homeless kids and one in three can't pay for their, I mean, that's astounding to me. And it's so heartbreaking. And I love that you found this problem and really talked to the people on the ground and figured out what to do. I work with state legislatures a lot, and there's not enough of that. There's not enough of on the ground research on what actually is needed. So that's incredible. And I, you know, wish you lots of success in this project.
Thank you.
What does your life look like? What does your day-to-day life look like as someone who is doing all of these things? I know you're busy, but what does the busyness look like?
Oh, you know, it depends on the season of kind of where we're at. During the legislative session, we are up on the Capitol, you know, really digging deep with the education committee, having a lot of one-on-one, you know, conversations with them. And then when it went to executive appropriations, really a lot of one-on-one there. I'm raising the $3 million. And so that's kind of under my, that's under my job description. And so I'm out doing fundraising meetings just, you know, just today. We are meeting with superintendents, I'd say probably at least one a day. So it's been really neat to see the superintendents leaning in on this, interested in this, bringing in their principals and their social workers and trying to understand how their school, you know, can capitalize on this. We were just talking to the Tintic School District, which is a tiny school district, two high schools, one with 150 kids, one with 20 kids, and learning about his needs. And it's been really important for us to dig deep locally. And that means, you know, locally in Tooele, locally in Logan, locally in Cache, because, you know, the migrant population in Logan is its own thing. And then, you know, Richfield and the opioid epidemic is its own thing. And so every town and city has its own issues and problems. And us learning about that, doing a lot of listening, I'd say we're not subject matter experts. And we, that is our job description, is we are here to shine a spotlight on a problem. We're here to fundraise, to get money for it. But then we are going to bring in experts, you know, in homelessness, in intergenerational poverty, in addiction, like all, you know, LGBTQ and refugees, and bring in the experts who can then help us do this the very best we can in schools. And so we have an incredible advisory committee who are those experts that we lean on, that we meet with. I'd say I'm always coming from a place of yes. You know, I just did a podcast actually on my Instagram channel just a couple hours before this on it with actually Dr. Finlayson Fife, who is, you know, sexuality coach and marriage coach. And I always say that empowerment does not confine itself to categories. And so as I'm empowering myself in reading, in improving my marriage, I have six kids. So I, you know, lean in heavy there, like in whatever way I'm empowering myself, it helps me in all areas of my life. And we have a lot of fun too. You know, the joy, it's a tough subject. And the stories that we hear on a day in and day out basis are truly gut-wrenching. But the joy that we find is coming together, finding a solution, bringing others along with us, and watching women using their voices for the first time is just an incredible thing to behold.
That's amazing. And kind of tying in that, why do you think it is important for women to speak up about issues? And especially, I think, LDS women, because that's kind of our focus. Why is it important? And how can they get started with that?
Oh, that's a really great question. It is of the utmost importance. You know, I'll tie it back to talking to Dr. Finlayson Fife, who talked about, you know, using your voice, making sure that your cup is full, ensuring that you're 100% and you're not trying to get that from your children or from your spouse or from others. But when we can have that confidence, when we can empower ourselves in different ways, maybe that's moving our body, maybe that's starting a book club, like in small ways throughout your life, standing up for yourself, maybe it's standing up for your kids. And then maybe slowly it starts trickling out into other areas, because empowerment does not confine itself to categories. And so I think we need to invest in ourselves. I'm a huge believer in, you know, delegating what you can and showing up for the things that you have to. I'm also a big believer. I don't work, you know, full time, but I don't get paid for anything, but you know, I do a lot outside of the home. And so when I come home, I pick my kids up from school, I am full. I feel satisfied. I've done things for others and I've done things for myself. And then I come back as a better mother. And then I can shine and have that strength, which then I can model that for my girls. You know, I have four girls that are watching that. So in terms of, I think what God wants us to do is to stand up for those. If you look at I'm on a Come Follow Me app today, it was all about, you know, being in the service of others. And oftentimes those friends of ours don't have a voice, don't have a seat at the table. So I truly believe personally, it is my duty. Like I actually don't have any other choice than to clothe the naked, to feed the hungry, to do that. Like that is my calling. It's self-appointed, but also I feel like if you've been given a lot, you have to give back to communities, to society. And I think that that's why God put us here. You know, his hands are not here on earth. It's our voices and our hands. I don't think it always has to be, you know, in a missionary sort of way, but just being there for others, using your voice. And I truly believe it's what we're called to do as women. And I'll end with, I believe that women and girls will change society. And I believe only if we want to change things, if we want to rethink the way that things have always been done, I think it will come. I believe it will come from women and mothers, because they understand. Like you said, they are the boots on the ground. They are the ones in the home or outside the home. They are the ones that understand better than anyone else. And it is doing our community, it is doing Heavenly Father and a disservice to not be out there and using your power, your influence, whatever you have, for the good of others.
That's incredible. And you say that so well. One of the things we love to say at Project Elect is that public service is service. And it, you know, it's another way to serve others and getting involved in these issues. And exactly what you've been doing is, it's just another form of service that sometimes women don't realize they can get involved in, or they're intimidated to get involved in. When you first started this, did it come naturally to you talking to legislatures? It sounds like you already knew some of them personally, or was it kind of difficult to switch gears and talk politics?
Yeah, not comfortable at all. And I'm a little bit of a bull in a china shop. And so like Mary Catherine and Emily are like, hey, play the long game. Don't get upset. You know, I've been in the business world, you know, my husband and I own businesses, and like the legislature politics is like nothing else in the world. I'm still trying to understand the dynamics up there because it's bizarre to me. So no, I'm the dumbest person at the table when we're sitting and talking about policy, but I'm learning. You know, it's like drinking from a fire hose. Half of it I don't understand, but I'm willing to lean in and to listen and to learn. I'm getting to kind of understand the lingo. I don't think it'll ever be one of my passion points of actually talking to legislators. I think people on my team are better at that. And so I'll leave that to them. I'm the community champion. So I'm out in the community. I'm on social media. I'm rallying, you know, doing parties and events. And I'm much more better with the people than the legislators. But I think that's good to know, like, this is my talent. So go off of that. You know, if you're not great at that, you know, up at the legislature or dealing with decorum and all that, like, you don't have to go spend your time there. Find people that are good at that, that enjoy that. Because it won't stick. You know, I always say, like, with service and with leaning in, like, if someone said, Kristen, you need to go, like, save the whales, save the turtles in Hawaii. I'm like, I like, don't care. Like that, I don't care. So it wouldn't stick. I wouldn't show up, you know, authentically me fighting the fight. And some people will, because that, and so stick with your talent, stick with what you're good at, and then build off of that, and then find other people that are good at certain things and bring them in. That's what a CEO does, right? A CEO is like a visionary. They're over strategy. They're not necessarily really good at any one thing. And I think if we can kind of, if we can team as women together more like that, than trying to take ownership over it, you just end up in such a better place.
Yeah. And a lot of women need help delegating. So that's a good, like a CEO, find people who are good at things and delegate it to them and have the vision.
I'm the queen of delegating. Let me just tell you, delegating is the best thing in the world. I joke, everyone's like, how do you do it all? And I'm like, oh, I delegate everything. I actually do nothing. Like, I laugh, but I'm like, but actually a lot of that's true, you know, and bring people along with you. You're not delegating to offset work. You're bringing other people into the fold, into the issue, into this group, this momentum. It's actually benefiting. It benefits everybody when you delegate.
It absolutely does. I love how you say that. It benefits everybody. So you were talking about how one of your talents is social media and talking to the people. What are your thoughts on using social media to get people talking about and interested in issues? Can you give us any tips and tricks on the best way to do that?
Yes. Just start. Start talking about it. Start sharing the behind the scenes. Start sharing the wins, you know, share the losses, share the journey. You know, I'm big on saying that the journey is the destination. So it's never the win on periods or the win on teen centers, because the next day you wake up and it's like, oh my gosh, now we have to implement these teen centers. It never ends and it keeps going. And so taking others along with you on the journey And then realizing, like, wait, a year ago, Kristen never talked about policy. What is she doing up at the Capitol? Well, I'm making it up, you know, but I'm showing up and I'm leaning in. And social media is a funny thing. And often I've kind of asked, like, you know, up to heaven, like, should I be doing this? Do I have to be doing this? And really, there were two answers. Like, you can't let people's stories stop with you. So share people's stories. If you're in situations where you're learning about issues or problems or things or people's stories, share those stories so that what you're learning, what you're gaining, the wisdom, the knowledge, the education doesn't stop with you. And then bring others along with you on the journey, because the other half of that is that I feel that my job is to show women, to model to women how to be brave and bold in your life and give them the permission to do that. You know, in my life, it's going to look different than maybe the women watching, but I'm going to do it this way. And you know, next year, Kristen's going to be onto something totally different. But once again, I'm going to be modeling, giving others a permission, women especially, be brave and bold in your life. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm going to do it anyways. And I'm going to show up in a way that's going to hopefully cause you to say, you know, I had this one, I was speaking at something and someone got up and said, I need bracelets that said, what would Kristen do? Because it was Mackenzie Bauer who owns Thread Wallets. And she said, I'm often in situations and I think of Kristen with all this confidence, all of this stuff, and she just does it anyways. And I'm like, what would Kristen do right now? And I thought, well, that's actually what I'm trying to do, you know, is to show women, like, I don't care if it's being confident and bold in the boardroom, in the bedroom, in your neighborhood, in your elementary school, at work, but let's be brave and bold and then let's invite others along with us. And so showing the good and the bad, being authentic, laughing at yourself is a huge part of it. We show the sad and we share the stories, but we also show the laughter and the fun and how, you know, public service can actually be an incredible good, you know, an incredibly good time. So kind of showing all of that and then inviting others. If you keep showing, but you're never inviting people to come with you, you know, whether it's an event or a, whatever it may be, I think there always needs to be some kind of interaction back and forth.
That's fantastic. And serving as example and inviting them to come with you, I love that. And, you know, that doesn't work just for social media. That's for everything.
So, yeah.
Well, totally. Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to hear a little bit about, you talked a little bit about your family and how you got them serving, but have they been involved at all? How have they, you know, supported you during this, you know, six kids is no joke. Oh. And you know, how has that worked with your kids and your husband and your family?
Yes. I'm in a really great spot right now. You know, there's a time and a season for everything. And I've always been one that has to have a little something outside of the house. I could never just be home even as I was birthing six children in 8 years because I had twins at the end. But I always kind of needed to get out. I always needed a little bit of me time. And so for one, I was very clear and asked for help. You know, I told Jeremy, like, I'm going to do this. I have this going on. Can you support me here as I supported him? And so one, he's my biggest cheerleader, my biggest support, and I am his. And so, you know, when he travels and has to go do his things, I'm like completely supportive. And then when I have my things and I travel and, you know, have my events, he's totally supportive. And so that has been huge. Without 100%, you know, support from him, it would be really, really hard. And then with my kids, now that I have kind of this 8 to 3 o'clock time when they're in school, I try to do most of it during then, and I am able to do a lot, but then there's a lot of missed pickups and early drop-offs and I can't be there for this because, you know, of the session and just different important events. And so how I would say it is this: when we got this news of the $18 million for teen centers, which was just massive, it was just absolutely unbelievable and a huge, huge win for us. The news came through at midnight on Friday night, and on Saturday morning, I was in the Provo Marriott at a dance convention with one of my daughters, and I'm just like bawling in the lobby because I'm just overwhelmed. And the first thought, of course, is my family. And so I send, you know, group text to my kids who are 15 down to 7. Obviously not all have phones. And I said, you guys, we did it. Look what we were able to do. You know, I said, thank you for allowing me to help these kids who may not have the support that you do. Thank you for giving me the bandwidth and the freedom for the late drop-offs, the early morning, like whatever it was, like all of the things that I missed so that we could help thousands of kids across Utah. Thank you for supporting me, you know, as your mom. But it was this group effort. And it made me cry even more because I thought it was worth it. You know, kids sacrificing for a mom is awesome. It is such, I believe, in my humble opinion, it is so important for them to see me as a woman, as an advocate, hearing these stories, helping. I said, you guys set up, you guys loaded cars, you showed up to events, you helped clean up, you helped sweep. I named all the things. I said, you guys did this. Like, this was a team effort. And so for them to see these huge wins that their mom was a part of, to me, more than makes up for the lack of when I wasn't there. And of course, there's always a yin and a yang, and it, you know, it goes back and forth. But I thought it was worth it. It was absolutely worth it. The time that I had to take away from them to do this, because it was a group effort, and they will never forget this last year, last 2 years. They'll never forget it.
Well, and I love how you made your success their success too, and told them, yeah, you know, we did it, we did this, and they're a part of it and a part of something big. And what a great, you know, experience and opportunity for kids to feel like that they've made a difference.
Yeah.
That's something, yeah, they'll never forget that. That's incredible. I love it. Okay, we're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you if you've ever considered running for office yourself, or are you more, you know, doing what you want to do and you're good?
You know, I have been asked by different people if I would consider it. Right now, I would not. I love the philanthropy. So this is part of what I do, but I also do a lot of other stuff with refugees, with other group, I don't know, other groups across the state. And I love that work. We have like a family foundation. And so that's a really big piece of my life as well. So I would say no at this point. Never say never. But right now, I find a lot of joy in what I'm doing. I find the legislature frustrating up there, and I know that that means I should go up there and try to change it. So I'd say the answer is no right now, but I'll always leave the door open, which is the first time I've ever said that. So.
Well, good. Thank you. Thank you for saying that on our podcast. Well, I like the never say never, because there are always seasons, but I also, yeah, you know, think what you're doing is so incredible that, you know, if this is where your talents lie, then this is where your talents lie. But I do think you could be, you know, make some great, great differences in the legislature too. So
thank you.
I'm sure you'll do great things, whatever you end up doing long term. Well, I appreciate you so much coming on this podcast. We always like to end and asking you to give an invitation to our listeners to, you know, how they can become involved or a step they could take.
Yeah, I would say just lean in, start keeping your eyes and ears and hearts and prayers open to maybe how you can serve and love and help outside of your bubble. And I say that because I think sometimes the magic is not, sometimes it's in the home and sometimes it's five doors down. But some of the richest moments in my life have been just getting outside of my neighborhood, getting outside of my comfort zone, getting outside of my bubble, and learning what life is like for others. You know, philanthropy and serving and all of that is really using your time and talents and what you have at your fingertips to help change the world. And so I think asking what makes me uniquely you, what makes me uniquely me, how can I help? How are my hands and heart and service needed? And maybe the answer is inside your home right now, but I'm always trying to push women to be a little bit uncomfortable, to like sign up, you know, show up and then go back, you know, sit in an apartment of someone, invite someone that doesn't look like you over to your home or has a different background or lifestyle or religion and learn and sit in people's stories. And the more that you do that, you won't stop doing it because it just makes your life so rich and beautiful. So get uncomfortable, sign up, show up, and invite.
Well, thank you. That's an amazing invitation. And I would definitely echo that. Getting uncomfortable is hard, but it's how you learn more. And it's how you expand, you know, your understanding of the world. And really, you're such a good example of that, because you found these issues just listening to people that are huge issues and really make an impact. So that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and, you know, hopefully we can talk again.
Yes. Thank you so much. You had really great questions. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening in to the Project Elected podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to projectelectwomen.org. We'd love for you to subscribe, rate, give a review on iTunes. So until next time, talk to you soon.